This is the Mind Your Business podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Mind Your Business podcast. My name's Matt Williams. I'm joined, as ever, by Alan Clark. And Alan's going to tell us what we're talking about this week.
I am indeed. Good afternoon, Matt. So today we're going to talk about winning the war on talent.
Wow. Not the war on terror, the war on talent. And this is really pertinent because as you said that, I realised that I've had two meetings with clients today, both of which were talking about the process of hiring people and how difficult it is at the moment. And I can see it's only going to get more difficult. So, and you've been coaching and doing some leadership stuff on people recently as well, Alan. Do you want to start with that and we'll see where we go?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think it's true to say that every business owner wants the best quality people in the business. You know, I think we all get that. And I think we all get a definite level that the better the people, the better the performance, et cetera, et cetera. But in my experience, there's definitely lots of things you can do to create a culture that's conducive to talent coming into your organization or your company to start with, and then growing, and therefore the company getting the benefit of that talent, and they want to stay, you know, and attract more talent. So there's definitely loads and loads that business owners and leaders can do to create an environment conducive to growing talent.
Do you think that's changed the way you would go around building your culture at the back end now, let's say the second half of 2021? Do you think that's going to be different to how you were doing that, let's say in 2019, pre-pandemic? Do you think the way this new hybrid remote working kind of scenario that the majority of businesses are in, do you think that's fundamentally affected how you build a culture?
Yeah, I think it's, so it will be different. Okay, it will be different. In my view, definitely different in that there's extra things to consider. However, you know, in the hybrid home working versus office working, you know, you really, and we've talked about this before, you can turn this into a really good news story. You can really talk up the flexibility options. There's more trust now. However, be mindful that when people aren't all together in a physical space, there's a potential loss of team dynamic, or potential loss of collaboration, potential loss of idea creation. And therefore, how do you create a culture that still has that all in the mix? So maybe more things to think about for sure. But the principle is, if you ultimately look after your people and create an environment that they can grow and feel really good about your company and what you're up to, then that's the 80-20 on creating a culture conducive to talent growth.
And that big picture, wanting to build the culture where people can feel like they're part of the team, they can grow within the business, help, you know, they're aligned to the goals of the business. That's not changed since 2019, right? It's the way in which you're using the new normal to build that culture. And I think there's an element, there's two types of leaders in this new world. There's a lot of business leaders and owners that are not necessarily, would go back 2 years, wouldn't have been managing like this, but are now clock watching and kind of checking productivity and micromanaging their staff because they can't physically see them. So they don't get that nice comforting feeling that their people are working hard, even though they more than likely are, because productivity is generally up with people working at home. But they're focusing where they wouldn't necessarily have before, but they're now focusing on clock watching, micromanaging, stressing about, are the people doing the jobs, you know, how do we monitor that, etc. And the danger there is not that they're not going to go back eventually to how they were, which is not clock watching, etc. But that whilst they're doing that and obsessing, their competition is embracing this new world, and they're doing the whole forward thinking thing, because those are the businesses, the ones that have taken the hybrid world in their stride and are continuing to build their culture and continuing to let their staff be autonomous and grow. Those businesses are going to be five steps ahead of the other ones. They're winning that war on talent because they're already, you know, any interviews that come in, the people going to come into the business, they're going to speak to the other staff and they're going to say, it's been brilliant. You know, we've got all this flexibility. We've got all the systems that we need. That's the danger, I think. If you're sitting here today and you are in that camp of micromanaging and worrying about what your people are doing and you've not given them the tech and you're not, you know, embracing the cloud and all the other ways that the modern world is now in, that's where the war's being lost, I think. And it's interesting. We've had lots of conversations with clients about this, and it's not like they were, I'm not going to say bad places to work beforehand, but the way they view their people hasn't necessarily changed. It's just the way they've managed them because they didn't know any different. And when you can't see what your people are doing, it is difficult to manage them, and people are going down a route that they wouldn't necessarily do, and that's causing them problems. So that's I guess my initial thought on this whole war on talent, but it is getting cutthroat. I was literally at a manufacturing business before we were recording now, and the chap's trying to recruit. He's seen 7 applicants in the last 3 weeks, which is fantastic. First of all, I think we need to talk about that there. Everything I'm hearing is that it's a candidate-led market at the moment. So there's more jobs than there are good quality candidates. So candidates can kind of take their pick. And that's a complete sea change for this guy. 18 months ago, the last time he recruited, or 2 years ago now, if he got 1 or 2 applicants per job, he was lucky. Now he's got 8. But he said, it's just moving too quick for me. He said, I had a guy and I said, we had a great interview and I left him with, I'm going to speak to the references this afternoon and let you know. He rang the references. They didn't pick up. He managed to get hold of them the next morning. Next afternoon, he rang the guy to offer him the job and he'd already taken one elsewhere. And that's how quickly it's moving. And it's never been like that in that industry. And I think that's you need to be able to wow candidates the instant, not even the instant they walk through the door for the interview or come onto the Zoom, but before that, when they're checking your website out and they're looking at all the other little touch points with your business, you need to wow them at that point because they've got a choice nowadays. And it's not the big honor and privilege to work for your business that it might have been 2 years ago, because there's 5 or 6 or 7 other businesses doing exactly the same thing. And if they move quicker than you, that's it, game over. So that's where the conversation I'm having at the moment seem to be. And I work with a lot of recruiters, and that's the feedback they're giving me too. Has that come up in any of your conversations?
Yeah, absolutely it has. You know, definitely I've heard examples of that too. That for me, I always go back to play to your unfair advantage, right? And if you are wanting the best people in the industry to work for you, there needs to be a reason why they want to work for you. And usually it's in who you are being as a leader, the quality of the conversation, the package that you're offering, as well as the culture and the business, as well as what you're up to in terms of your purpose and your clients and the type of work. And you usually, when that's in a 8 out of 10 or a 9 out of 10, then it's handshakes all around relatively quickly. You know, I think what we're going to experience over the next 2 years, though, is when that's not in place, you're very quickly going to go to the back of the queue. Because the other dynamic that's playing out, of course, and we've talked about this before, is that more and more people are going into business for themselves, you know, and technology is playing a massive part in that too. So there's a lot of intellectual genius, passion, enthusiasm, brilliant customer care, whatever, it's actually going into startups and starting up their own businesses rather than coming to work for you. So I would argue even more than ever, you know, looking at a strategy to attract the best quality people out there, and it being authentic and being able to demonstrate that will be how you will win the war on talent. Definitely.
You have to put yourself in the shoes of the candidates. Uh-huh. If you've got four or five options, then every little detail counts. It's not just the brand name. It's not just the person you interview with. It's how you're, you know, I think if I was a candidate now, what I would be looking at outside of just the brand name and the person that I'm interviewing with is the history of the business. I'd be looking at Google reviews and seeing what the customer's saying, looking who the customers are. And is it a good, who are the customers? Are they, you know, are they good brands themselves? Do I want to, does that excite me working with those people? Look at the other people that are in the business, and you know, you can get a feel for lots and lots of things that are more important nowadays. And it goes down to little things. Are they going to give you a good laptop? Are you going to get an Apple, you know, yep, you're going to get a MacBook Pro, you're going to get some piece of crap old £200 Dell, whatever it is, that's going to all factor in nowadays, where before your candidate would have had maybe a choice of two places. It's all a lot less, it's all of that would be a lot lower down the pecking order, but now you've got all these choices. It's not about the packet. It's not about the money. The amount of times people have said to me, because the reality is, everyone I've spoken to today, this week, this month about recruiting, the people they've hired have all had a counter offer in their business. So they've accepted the offer, then had a counter offer. And like I said, the manufacturing business, he'd had three that had a counter offer that blew him out of the water and they stayed. But the majority, if they're out the door enough to take the interview, the counter offer is almost irrelevant unless it absolutely blows them out of the water.
Yeah.
And then, as I said to my client, well, you know what? That's great. You've now got three competitors that are overpaying massively for a member of staff. So either they're going to lose their margin or they're going to have to raise their prices. Either way, that's better for your business. It's indirect compared with having the employee, but it's, you know, that's the way we are now. You need to put the whole package together. There needs to be extras over and above the salary, right, that makes it a destination to come and work.
Yep. Let me give you an example from the sporting world that I read only yesterday. So, as you know, and I'll immediately isolate half of Glasgow here, but I'm a Rangers fan, okay? And there's a Zambian player that has just signed for Rangers, 24 years old, was playing with a Belgian football side. I can't remember the name. And he said that he had conversations with two top Premier League sides. He said in the top half of the table and two top French teams in the top five in France and Rangers. Okay, and he's had conversations and they all wanted to buy him. And he said, I went with the Rangers because of Steven Gerrard. And he was the only person that said what he would do to help my career, i.e. make me a better football player. So I guarantee you that the top French and English clubs would have offered more money, for sure. But Steven Gerrard was the only one that said, look, I can make you a better football player, and here's how. And being Steven Gerrard, with the authenticity, he was an England captain. We all know he was a very good football player. So, you know, that speaks as coaching staff. People know who they are. That talks as well. So it was all authentic, you know, and that player went to Scotland when he could have gone and played in either the top English sides or the top French sides, all things being equal. So I think that's a really good analogy to show the power of the conversation and how you can make somebody feel. But actually, what are you going to do to develop their career and make them better? It's hugely important.
Those intangibles, right? Yeah, you would see him, he would have been there, you'd walk around the stadium, he would have seen the infrastructure, he'd have met, you know, things like wheeling out the chairman and the board and that. All of those things will impact that person's decision whether to join that football club, that business, whatever it is. 100%. It's not just, here's the contract, it's £5,000 a year more than the other place, well, that's enough for me to sign.
That's right.
Those days are dead now. I think the other thing that is really important, actually, we experienced this in our business just before Christmas. I think employers or potential employers need to be more flexible in terms of what they want the job that they're offering. We thought we wanted someone full time. We went to the market like that. We got some interesting candidates through the door, but none of them were quite right. And then we had a chap come through a recruiter, and he could only do 3 days a week. Yeah, he was moving because of lifestyle, not because he disliked the job, but he wanted to work 3 days a week to look after his children. And you know what? He is an absolute gem. And it was possibly the best decision we made in the whole of last year, was to say, you know what? We can do this. We can work the job around. We can change it from 5 days to 3 days. We can work some other things. We can hire someone else to do, you know, take the slack. And I think if we'd have been rigid and said, you know what, you know, we could have taken one of those other full-time candidates, and I don't know if we'd have been as successful as we were with that hire. That ability to kind of on the fly change and make a decision that's, you know, not what you're expecting to make when you go into the process is important, because that opens and widens the talent pool. Because there's lots of people out there at the moment that are very employable but are not in the market for one reason or another. There's stay-at-home parents, there's people that have been, you know, furloughed from part-time jobs and are not going to be going back to them and might be career changing. There's lots of churn in the labour market. You need to kind of be able to think on your feet and pitch, you know, like you do with your marketing. Most businesses are really good at understanding who their ideal clients are or ideal customers are and marketing to them. You need to kind of pivot round. And if you're doing a recruitment drive, you need to look exactly that. Who's our ideal type of candidate in terms of personality and cultural fit and all of that, and then market to them. Do it. Take them as if you're trying to attract customers, and think about all the things you throw at potential customers to get them into your sales funnel. Needs to be the same with your staff.
Well, that's right. You know, we hear it often about marketing strategies, about sales strategies, but, you know, absolutely have a talent strategy. The word strategy, that I love the definition, is a set of action that wins. You know, I've used that before. You know, so straight off the bounce, if you don't have a talent strategy and you wanted to start now, then two of the best things you can do is to get really clear, first of all, with all the people that work for you, is the role that they do, and that do they really understand the role, and why, if they were being a 9 out of 10 in that role, it would make a massive positive difference to your company and to your customers. So getting really real clarity on role profile, and also just be transparent about what a good job looks like, what a great job looks like. And if I want to access a 5% pay increase, then this is the level of contribution that I need to give to get that. If it's 2%, then it's this, you know. So we can start to talk a lot about contribution and career progression. So that all comes from role profile and development within the role. And also the other big thing that makes a huge difference, and you can do it straight away, is communication. It's how often do you talk to your teams? What's the tone? What's the subject? How are you being? Are you motivational? Are you inspiring? Are you asking for contributions, for builds? You know, are you caring enough to really understand what's going on in people's worlds and how can you help? So communication and role clarification, you can start doing that tomorrow from a standing start. And over 6 months, that makes a massive difference to culture, which, of course, you can then talk up when you are interviewing.
Absolutely. And I'm going to pick up on something you said right at the start of that section, which is the right person in the right seat is absolutely crucial. And lots of businesses, if we go right the way back to the start of this conversation, there is going to be a war on talent, right? There are not enough quality candidates to fill all the quality roles in the labour market, certainly at least not locally where we are. So on that basis, if you've got good people in your business, you need to look after them. That's the other way. We've been talking a lot about bringing people in, but you need to continue to keep what you've got. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of businesses. We had this in our business, I don't know, 18 months ago, where you've got the right person. They're the right person for the business, but they're in the wrong role. And marrying up and understanding that that's a situation that it's not a bad thing to understand mm-hmm. that actually this person needs to be in the business. We understand that, but we need them to do a different role because what they're doing is not matching their skill sets, or it's not making them happy, or it's not delivering astonishing results to your customers. Whatever it is, sort of separating the person from the role, looking at all the roles you've got and all the people you've got and putting it back together will help you retain your staff. Point mm-hmm. one, mm-hmm. but it will also then let you understand who you need to recruit in terms of the type of person for the role that you've now got available, and do it that way round rather than think, oh, I need, I don't know, a estate agent. I need someone that's going to negotiate sales, and that's all I need, and not think about the wider impact on the business and how actually having a complete 100% cocky traditional estate agent salesman with the shiny shoes and the ill-fitting suit, all of that, how that's going to affect the other eight people in that business, and understanding that, yeah, right person, right seat is a key process that any business should go through periodically, because that will shift over time as well. And the ability to allow your people to grow and move up and change what they're doing will create different roles underneath, right? We were talking again, without keep harping back to this manufacturing client, we were talking about him today about how there is a lack of people in the market in doing what he does. It's a really skilled kind of high precision manufacturing. And I said, well, how did you get into it? He said, well, I was an apprentice, and we generally take an apprentice a year, and most of them go, but it's really hard to find the right apprentices. Whereas when I did it, there was loads. And we had a chat about it, and I think in their particular instance, but this might apply to lots of trades, back in when I was at school in the kind of 90s, which, by the way, is when you're talking to your kids, that's like when they were telling, my mum was telling me about the 60s now, which just to make you feel old, right? But when I was in the 90s, the kids that weren't not bright, that's not the right term, they were bright people, but they just weren't academic. They were kind of pushed away from school and into trade apprentices, like mechanics or electricians or whatever else. And that's why we've got this generation, or I've got a generation of trade clients who are really bright chaps, but they were never academically, you know, minded at school. And I wonder if schools are better nowadays at keeping those less academic people within the school system, you know, nurturing them better, teaching them, educating them better, and then not falling out of school and falling into apprenticeships like they did 15, 20 years ago, which means that finding good apprentices for those sort of businesses is really difficult. But it means that in 10 years' time, their labour market is going to be on its knees because there is so little new blood coming in that they need to, he realised in that meeting that he needs to push the boat out and find 2, 3, 4 apprentices and really push it so that he's safeguarding his business for the next 10 years and to some extent his industry, because otherwise there's this complete sort of dearth of people in the roles.
You're absolutely, I mean, very, very well articulated. You know, you could have the best business in the world right now. And this shows the power of, this is leadership. You know, that's why vision is so important. You visualize how the industry changes, how your business needs to change, how it needs to adapt, and what your future customers are going to look like. And then you've got a resource gap. You need human beings to come in. You need human beings with certain qualifications, or at least, you know, the best that you can mold. And suddenly there's no, you're not getting them through, you know, and the whole business is at real risk. And to your point, if enough businesses are at risk, then the industry's at risk, you know. So this is a big challenge, but that's all it is, you know. It is a challenge that the best businesses will be more than up for the challenge and want to create an environment that the very best people want to come and work for them. For me, that's the ultimate logic. It's illogical, if you really think about it, to have an environment that nobody wants to work with. You know, that's not really going to last very long.
I remember watching on TV, we haven't talked about my TV watching habits for a few podcasts now, but there was a TV show, a documentary about a call centre in Wales, where they were literally every week they'd pick a new contract up, and this week they were selling loft insulation, and next week they were selling insurance, and then they're selling something else. And it was purely like a battery farm, right? It was getting in the morning, dial the numbers, keep dialing and keep talking and keep dialing, get swore at and swore at and swore at by more irate customers until you make a sale. And then there's a big cheer and everyone rings a bell, and then you do it all again. And it was, they'll take anyone. I don't care who you are. You don't need an interview. You come in. If you make a sale, great, you get paid. And if not, then fine, you take minimum wage and off you go. And they just churned people through. And it was, I remember sitting thinking, who on earth is going to do that job? And they must have had 150 people in that call center, and they churned them really quickly. But they were quite, that was the business. And they were quite happy to be known as the kind of employer of last resort in the town. And you think that, so there are plenty of businesses that don't care. I mean, I think it's really short-sighted to anyone that thinks like we do. It's obviously very short-sighted, but I think we can't discount the fact that there are people that don't care.
That there are, but even in that example, imagine there was a rival company doing exactly the same thing in the next city in Wales that had completely the opposite philosophy. So they very much looked after their people. They put in the best possible sales training. There was clear career structure. I suspect they would get the best talent in terms of that industry into that, and they would perform a much better level than that other one, so that they are going to outbid that company and do much better than that other company, you know. So I take your point, you know, when the competition is low, or, you know, maybe there's just so much of that work out there, then you can get away with that. But if a rival turns up and turns the way they treat people on their head, like, you know, you mentioned the battery farm, you know, battery farm versus organic free range. You know, undeniably the quality of the egg is different. Now, there is a market for cheap eggs, absolutely, but the quality of that eggs is different. But, you know, if suddenly there's more organic farming and the price is coming down, then the battery farm will go out of existence soon enough once the price is stabilized. Well,
can you buy non-free range eggs anymore? I think it's cool.
I don't even know. So maybe that was a useless 1 minute, but I was trying to.
Because it shows that the industry, you're right, that's your danger. If you're operating at the bottom end and you don't care about your people, then given that, this is kind of the whole podcast summed up, right? Given that the war for talent is getting more and more serious, I think if you are on pursuing I don't really care about my people strategy, it's really short-sighted, and it's going to end with your business being completely irrelevant, unable to attract any talent at all. And either the industry will pivot away from what you're doing completely, or your business will become completely and utterly bottom tier, no future. That feels like a big old statement, but it is true. The reality is most businesses cannot scale without new people, and I cannot conceive of a business scaling at any kind of pace with the wrong, repeatedly churning staff or hiring incorrect people.
You know, I've got a retail background, right? I do understand. And I used to see that all the time in shops of a certain culture. You just knew they were going to do really well. And then you went and you experienced shops of another culture, and you just knew it was going to be disaster zone. You know, I used to see that in a competition. I go and experience the level of care being clearly seen on their employees and that playing out in the customer. And you just knew the sales results were going to be in a certain place. You know, and I'm not naive enough to say in every single example this stacks up. But if you look at it over an average, for sure, the better your people working in your organization, the more motivated they are, you will have a much better performance, you know. And right now, I think you're absolutely right. There is a war on talent. The game has changed. If we thought that the people working in companies were becoming more demanding pre-pandemic, then post-pandemic, it's only going to get ratcheted up another scale. So, you know, unless you want to be back at the queue, you really do need to have a strategy for winning talent, developing your people, and putting the best possible team out there, or you're going to lose.
That's the bottom line. There's winners and losers, right? You want to make sure you're in the winning team. Okay, well, look, that's 31 minutes, Alan. Can you believe that? That's gone like that. And we say this every week, and maybe people think it's a script, but it's genuine. We genuinely just talk, and then somehow it ticks over to half an hour. So that's all for now. We will, I'm sure, revisit the whole people piece, because there's loads of conversations for us to have on it. But for now, that's all for this week. We're about to be able to number our listeners in the thousands, people. That's where we're at.
Hey.
If you're listening to this podcast and you've listened to all the others, you may well become our 1,000th listener. And if you are, we have no way of tracking or telling you and giving you a prize or anything, but know that subconsciously we appreciate you just as much as all the other listeners that we have. As ever, you can find us on Apple and Spotify. Tell all your friends, interact with us on LinkedIn. We had another lovely message today on LinkedIn, and we will be back next week with some more podcast gold. That's all for me, and that's all for my friend Alan.
Goodbye.
Do, 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 do.
This is the Mind Your Business podcast.